listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Brian Hayes and Dave Festruck from The Star in here. 6 p.m. Eastern time, Kawhi Leonard. Last time we checked, I mean, I think he's still in Toronto as far as we know. And the Kawhi watch continues. And I guess we have to rely on Chris Carter, who I suppose is connected. And Carter came out this afternoon and said, go ahead and celebrate July 4th down in the States. No answer is coming this afternoon or this evening. So based on that reporting, and everything is taken with a grain of salt, I guess we push it to tomorrow at some point. Maybe we hear from Kawhi Leonard.
Didn't happen on the 4th of Kawhi. We'll have to wait till the 5th of Kawhi.
How do you expect this to be unveiled? Do you think it'll be Kawhi? Will it be via social media? Will it be the Raptors? Will it be the Lakers, the Clippers saying we're out, or the Raptors saying we're out? Because, like, these teams, they have been committed to playing by Kawhi's rules. They're not leaking. The second he says, I'm not playing for you, they're leaking.
Yeah.
They're leaking.
Yeah.
So, like, I would love to know if Kawhi would have the audacity to call up, let's say the Clippers, say, I'm down to two teams, you're out, but can you do me a favor and not tell anybody you're out? Just to see what the reaction would be like.
Yeah.
Just to, I need that call recorded. Hey, Steve Ballmer, I know you've invested everything into signing me and bringing me home and changing the whole reputation of your organization that you paid $2 billion for. And you seem like a yappy guy. Steve Ballmer's a yappy guy, and Steve Ballmer wants to roll around Hollywood and tell everyone he signed Kawhi Leonard. Not happening. I'm not going to play for you. I'm deciding between the Lakers and the Raptors. I'm going to probably make the announcement in about 48 hours. Can you continue with the cone of silence for 48 hours? What do you think his reaction would be?
Steve Ballmer's reaction.
Steve Ballmer.
It might be, ha, 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 ha.
That
ha,
would be brilliant.
Ha, ha, ha.
I would give a lot of credit to Steve Ballmer if he had that type of
that'd be pretty
sense
good.
Of humor.
That'd be pretty good. Yeah, you're right. The minute you do that, the minute you tell the team you're out, that's when the leaks come, right?
Yes.
That's when the leaks sprout.
Yeah.
And so you don't do that, right? You got to keep it. You got to keep everybody in the ballgame if you want to keep the cone of silence intact.
Yeah. Because, like, if he's here working on the details of a contract, which is a possibility.
Very possible.
Very possible that the Raptors and Kawhi Leonard have committed to a relationship going forward, and they're working out whether or not it's going to be a short-term deal, a long-term deal, all the other particulars or whatever. You're not going to tell the Lakers and the Clippers anything until it's officially done.
Yeah.
And then once both parties are ready to kind of get it out there that it's officially done, I got to think you call the Lakers and the Clippers simultaneously. You know, one guy calls the Lakers, one guy calls the Clippers, says thanks, but no thanks, we're out. And that's probably how it's going to start to
trickle out.
To trickle out.
Yeah.
I would think.
That's the moment Woj will get it, and it'll be out.
Process of elimination.
By process of elimination.
Two teams
exactly.
have been told they're out, so the third team wins.
Exactly. But I think, you know what? As much as we've been fixated on what team he will pick, I don't think we've given enough credit to the difficulty of the decision around what term he will select. Will he want the security of the five-year deal? Will he want the prospect of making the absolute supermax 10-year veteran 35% of the cap salary that he can make in two more years if he signs a 1+1 or a 2+1? Because that's the intriguing one for me. That will say a lot about the way Kawhi Leonard sees his career progressing from him. It'll say a lot about his risk tolerance, the way watching guys like Boogie Cousins and Isaiah Thomas, who could have been max players but aren't because they got injured, and a guy like Kevin Durant, who is a max player and got the max even though he's hurt, it'll be interesting to see how he views himself, because the financial maximum will only be achieved if he wants to bet on himself and go 2+1 or 1+1 and get to that 10-year veteran status to get the 35% of the cap, which, by the way, now, just in case you don't know, right now he can only get 30% of the cap.
Well, and for whatever reason, that option, the short-term option, has only been applied to Toronto.
Yeah.
Why he could do the same thing in L.A.
Can do it anywhere.
Why would he not? Like, yeah. If you're committed, like, these are two separate issues.
Yeah.
If you are committed to rolling the dice on only making 30% of the cap for a couple of years, I would think once you're committed to that, it applies to all three parties.
Yeah.
Like, this is another part of the uncertainty that has just, it's just run amok where people have just taken it as fact. Well, if he's going to Toronto, it's short term. If he goes to L.A., it's the full 4 years. Why?
Well, how did you come to that conclusion?
Why would that be the case?
I don't understand that logic.
There isn't any logic.
No, there's no logic there.
No. It's because there's still this built-in kind of stigma that he doesn't really like Toronto and the cold weather. Like, L.A. is a lifestyle move. He's going to L.A. because it's the lifestyle. It's not about the basketball.
Right.
It's not about the money. Where, in reality, he could have his cake and eat it, too.
Of course he can.
If he goes back to L.A., he can get the lifestyle. He can be home, but he can also be like, I'm going to cash in that much more in 2 years.
He can play it by ear.
And
he
put pressure
on
you guys.
He can play it 1 year at a time like LeBron's done in the past. He
can
play it 1 year at a time if he so chooses.
Well, and I would argue with the Lakers option, it might make the most sense because of what kind of – you're walking into a perceived gong show.
Could be.
You know, so if you keep the pressure on them, hey, you got to keep me happy. And you know that promise you gave me, LeBron, that you are going to defer to me? Well, I'll opt out in a year, and I'm leaving if you don't.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
That, exactly. I mean, if you're Kawhi Leonard and you wanted to go to the Lakers because you're an L.A. guy and playing for the purple and gold, some people now call them the purple and old, if that means something to you, I would highly recommend as your agent that you go 1+1.
Right.
That you feel it out for a year and see if you like it.
Let's bring in Mark Berman from the New York Post. He's a columnist with the Post. He's down in Vegas covering the Summer League, and he joins us now. What's happening, Mark?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. What's the buzz like down there? I mean, it's all about Zion and R.J. Barrett, I'm sure, but is there a lot of kind of Kawhi chatter down in Vegas as well?
Yeah, well, we had an earthquake in the Los Angeles area that actually hit Las Vegas. We felt it in Las Vegas, and I tweeted that I thought Kawhi had just spurned the Lakers, and that's what it was. But it was an actual earthquake.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, all the NBA people are talking Kawhi. He's the last one on the board. Everyone knew he was going to take his time. It's not even taking his time. This is how it used to be. But, you know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving commit to the Nets before 6 p.m. on Sunday. So, you know, all the tampering that goes on with deals made beforehand is just rampant. So Kawhi really actually, you know, wanted to meet with the teams after the free agency actually began. And the Knicks couldn't wait. I mean, we had a thing about the Knicks could have had a Wednesday meeting, which was yesterday. But on Sunday, they had to move on. They realized there was such extreme long shots. They didn't want to lose out of some guys that they liked.
So, Mark, how is that being perceived in New York right now? Because on the outside, from 30,000 feet, it looks as though this is a franchise that cleared salary cap space, in part by trading their best player, Kristaps Porzingis, and now doesn't have players to put into that salary cap space because they've been spurned by the elite of this league.
Listen, it's mixed. It's definitely mixed. There's some fans who are just so sold on the Knicks young players from last year, Kevin Knox, Mitchell Robinson, Alonzo Trier, Damian Dotson, you know, that they want to grow with these young players, but none of those guys are going to be stars. I think a lot of people like the Julius Randle move. Maybe he could turn into a star. He averaged 20 points last season. He's not a defender, but he's a heck of a scorer for a big man. But, you know, listen, we've been writing about Kevin and Kyrie for so long. We also were writing about Kawhi, about that they would meet with Kawhi and try to sell him on the business aspects of New York City and how his uncle is from South Orange, New Jersey, and he's known Steve Mills, the Knicks president, for many years because Steve also had lived in South Orange, New Jersey. So there's a big letdown for many fans, but there's another segment who thinks, you know, listen, if Durant wasn't injured and this happened, yeah, there would be a major outcry. Fans would be maybe, you know, asking for refunds on their season tickets. But next season, Kevin Durant is not playing a single game. So I think that lesson the disappointment.
With Mark Berman from the New York Post, R.J. Barrett is a guy that we're obviously very familiar with up here in Toronto. I think he's got all the makings of being a really quality player in the NBA. He clearly embraced going third overall. He wanted New York. He's been saying all the right things. How has the city of New York, how have the Knicks fans and media kind of embraced the idea of Barrett being a guy that could turn into that superstar?
They're very happy. They were afraid that they would not do the smart or safe thing and maybe try a Darius Garland and trade back a few notches, even for a Culver from Texas Tech. But listen, he better be a quality player, because when you pick third, you're trying to get, as you said, a superstar, at least an all-star. And I know there were some in the Knicks organization that weren't totally sold on Barrett as being a future all-star. He's not the most athletic guy, has trouble with his three-point shot. But he's 6'7". He could get to the basket. He's got great genes with his parents. And again, he seems, just from dealing with him for the last couple of weeks, he just seems to love the spotlight. He's been in the spotlight with Duke. I mean, obviously, being a phenom in Canada. So he's just seems to have all the makeup to be a star. But, you know, there's some little holes in his game. And I think if anyone has a chance to be a star, it's him. No, nothing's a sure thing. Neither is Zion Williamson. I can't wait for tomorrow night to see RJ and Zion on the court together facing each other. You know, the Summer League is the Summer League, but it's a nice first look at the two of them.
Yeah, the rare marquee matchup at a Summer League game, Berman. I mean, what kind of buzz is there for this this midsummer classic between the former Duke teammates?
Well, RJ, and I spoke to him today after practice, and he definitely is trying to play it down. You know, Zion and RJ are kind of hanging out in Vegas a little bit. But he swears we have not talked about the game. You know, they're just talking about, you know, what 19-year-old kids talk about. You know, not so much basketball, but just everything else. And, you know, I don't know if they've been in Vegas many times before, you know, these past few days. But I think the fans can't wait. RJ was saying that, listen, you know, he may have to guard him on some switches. But he doesn't have any advice for his teammates. He said the guy is just this freak of an athlete, and you just got to try to contain him for not totally dominating. But it's just a great first opener. Obviously, the Summer League organizers were right on the ball and put this matchup together as the first game.
Well, enjoy it down there, Mark. We appreciate you finding time for us, especially considering you're down in Vegas. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
There's Mark Berman from the New York Post. Yeah, with them swinging and missing on all those free agents, it's going to be R.J. Barrett's team. Like, he's going to be the face of the Knicks.
I feel for the kid, man. That's a lot to take on for a 19-year-old kid who, as Berman points out, as good as he is and as high as his ceiling may be, you know, he's got flaws. You know, he's going to be exposed. He's not the shooter you need to be an elite player just yet. I think he's got the work ethic and the smarts and the guidance around him with his dad and his godfather being Steve Nash to get there. But man, when you're the center of attention in that market, and there's going to be failures and there's going to be debacles, I wonder how much is going to wear on him.
Yeah, it's going to take him a while. You're right. He, like Zion, I think, will step on the court and be noticeable and have a lot of positive attributes, and he'll have massive dunks. Like, you'll know what Williamson is up to.
Yes.
R.J. Barrett, you know, his outside shot can really struggle. He forces shots. You know, he's got to work on his game. Like, he's definitely got to work on his game. But I think he's got enough talent and ability that he can have a better career than Zion Williamson.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not convinced Zion, like, considering who he is, he's a tweener based on his size. He can jump out of the gym. He's an athletic freak. But he doesn't have a great shot either.
No.
And considering where the game is going, you know, it's leaning towards, you know, beyond the arc and being able to switch off and
Well, hey, we saw
a different world.
We saw it with our own eyes when the Raptors played Milwaukee. I don't care how freakish you are. I'm thinking of the Greek Freak here. If you can't shoot it, and Giannis can't shoot it, it's a massive hole that is very difficult to overcome, no matter how unimaginably athletic you are. And there's never been a more athletic player in this league than Giannis Antetokounmpo. And yet, because he struggles to shoot a jump shot with any competency, you can be exploited.
Yeah, it's going to burn you.
It burns
it's
you.
It's going to burn you. I mean, you're going to light up teams like the Bulls and the Knicks and teams like that in November or in December and March and stuff like that, just based on athleticism,
yes,
willpower. That's going to happen. And Zion Williamson will do that to certain teams. But you get into a seven-game series where a guy like Kawhi Leonard is facing you, you're in trouble.
Big trouble.
Like, that's what turned the whole series against Milwaukee is Kawhi said, I'm on him.
Game three.
Game three, put me on this guy. And all of a sudden, he just faded.
Totally.
He faded. Like, he fouled out in game three, I believe. Now, it was a double overtime game. He wasn't alone in that. But Giannis never had the same impact.
He didn't. And a lot of it stems from it. Yeah, the Kawhi coverage was huge, but the Raptors also realized that there was Kawhi tacked onto the idea that he just wouldn't shoot it.
Right.
Or he wouldn't shoot it enough to be a threat.
Funnel him into positions on the court where he's going to be uncomfortable.
And he, you know, he can't hurdle a wall of guys, which is what the Raptors put in front of him. So, you know, to get back to those kids, RJ and Zion, they got to take the instruction from that. You got to realize that unless you are a knockdown 35% to 38% and hopefully above threat from three-point range, you're not going to be elite in this league.
No.
Unless you're truly, truly special at another couple of skills, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And even then, even if you're Giannis, you're not going to win in this league. You're not going to carry a team to a win unless you can figure out how to shoot it.
Steve Phillips will join us, our Jays analyst. We'll get his take on what will be the plan moving forward with Aaron Sanchez. We'll get back into that conversation. Marcus Stroman, he's going to have at least one start skipped. Is he going to end up at the All-Star game? We'll see what Steve would do about that. And we'll get back into that MVP race in the National League because, again, Yelich is the guy everyone's familiar with. He just won the MVP. But Bellinger out in L.A., and the Dodgers have the best roster, best record in baseball.
They're rolling.
Who would get Steve Phillips' vote? We'll get to that and more with Steve next. All right, Steve Phillips will join us here in a moment. The Jays back in action tonight. The Red Sox down at the Dome. Marcus Stroman was supposed to pitch. He will not pitch tonight, dealing with that shoulder issue. It doesn't sound too concerning, but he won't go tonight. Derek Law will, I guess, start the game. Thomas Pannone has been called up. He'll get in there at some point. I should mention Ryan O'Reilly, the reigning Conn Smythe winner, will be on with First Up tomorrow morning at 9:15. So Landsberg and Koliakova will be catching up with Ryan O'Reilly at 9:15 tomorrow morning.
Big moment for Koliakova. I think he has said to me and probably on the air that Ryan O'Reilly is like his favorite guy he ever played with.
That's his boy.
That's his guy.
That is his boy. When they were in Buffalo, that would have been towards the end of the run for Koliakova. But, like, O'Reilly's got that reputation, just an old school. He's got the beard going, typical Canadian.
And loves the game.
Loves the game. Obsessed, like, with the game.
Like, and that's the thing you realize. There's guys who play the game and get paid to play the game, and they do their job. But they don't love the game anymore. Or maybe they never did. But this guy, the love is very clear.
Well, that was the big comment, like, last year that led to his exodus, basically, in Buffalo. He came out and said, I don't love the game as much as I did.
Right.
Which I think really rang true because of who he is, to your point. When you've got a guy that is obsessed with playing the game and all he wants to do is play and win and be in the rink and be in the room and be on the buses, when he's coming out and telling you that he's feeling defeated, it says something about his mental state, but also about how awful your organization is.
Yeah.
Like the Buffalo Sabres, at some point they've got to start moving. They got to start moving. Like, Dahlin is a piece.
He's great.
Really good piece. Eichel is a really good piece. Skinner, they overpaid, but he's going to score you goals and he can play for you. Their goaltending, I don't know where that's going, but at some point, they got to make a push because the division, you know, Tampa, Toronto, Boston, Florida's added Quenneville and Bobrovsky this summer. They're better, and they're going to make a push. The Habs, you know, they're a good team, but they got a lot of kids coming. They're not a great team, but they're a good team with Carey Price, Shea Weber, and a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
They had a surprising year last year. They still haven't spent all of their money. They spent some of their money.
Could be lurking in the weeds.
Well, this Mitch Marner stuff, man. The offer sheet is out there. The threat of an offer sheet apparently is back on the table.
Could Mark Bergevin simply be reloading?
I don't see it. I don't see it. The Habs. I don't know. You know, we'd have to go through the list of teams. You know, Columbus, because they swung and missed on everybody.
Yeah. Jarmo Kekalainen's got some guts, let's say.
Yeah. I'd have to look at their picks, and I'd have to look at, you know.
There's a lot to look at.
You got to have, if you're going to offer, and you have to offer sheet him so much money that the Leafs aren't going to automatically match. If you offer him $10.5 million or under, they're immediately matching, and they're not going to think twice.
Right.
So the only way you really feel like you can get Mitch Marner, I think it's got to be like a $13 million a year deal.
Yeah.
Like, in maybe
if you're serious.
If you're serious, like, we're going to put Kyle Dubas and company under the spotlight here, and we're going to make Mitch Marner the highest paid player in the league.
Yes.
Which I think is horrible business. I love Mitch Marner, but he's not the best player in the league.
Yeah.
He's not even close to the best player in the league.
It's a show business move more than it's a hockey business move.
Exactly. Which is another thing that has not been brought up enough. This idea that everyone else is going to make Mitch Marner's life so easy that they owe something to Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
That they don't have to explain to their owner why they're handing out this deal.
Exactly.
You know, like, Mitch Marner's a great player.
Wonderful.
Every team in the league would love Mitch Marner. But how do you go back to your owner and say, we're just going to make this guy the highest paid player in the league?
Yeah.
And the owner might be like, well, I thought McDavid was the best player.
So he hasn't won an MVP. Yeah. Doesn't get any heart votes.
Right. Is Kucherov? Are you talking about Kucherov, or who are we talking about here?
Has he won a playoff series? Has he led his team to a single playoff series victory? No.
No.
Like, he hasn't led the league in scoring, as far as we know.
That angle has not come up enough. The idea that you got to explain, like, these monster numbers get thrown out. Oh, you just offer sheet him $14
million. Right.
Hey, well, you got to go back to your owner and explain that you just gave this guy $14 million.
Exactly.
He's not the best player in the league.
In a league where one guy really can't make that much of a difference.
Right.
Exhibit A, Connor McDavid.
Exactly. Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 Jays analyst. What's happening, Steve?
Not much, guys. Listen, the answer to that negotiation is just offer him an annuity, spread it out over 35 years, pay it out over the last 25 years. I mean, like, isn't that the answer for everything?
Well, okay, Bobby Bonilla is famous for many different reasons, and you will be connected to Bobby Bonilla for the rest of your life. But can you explain the details here? Because, like, I've known about this for a long time. On July 1st every year, he gets paid, like, about $1 million or whatever. But didn't the Mets only owe him, like, $5 million?
Yeah, so starting in 2011, for the next 25 consecutive July 1st, he gets $1,193,248.20. I figured I might as well memorize the exact amount. In fact, I'm going to have it tattooed on my back.
Right.
But he had $5.9 million remaining on 1 year left on his contract, and we were going to release him. He wasn't as good a player. He was not behaving very well. He and Bobby Valentine didn't get along, and so it was time to part ways. Bad mistake to bring him back in. My mistake to bring him back in. And so we wanted to release him. Ownership said, completely get it. We're going to release him. Let's see. Because the first time Bonilla was with the Mets, they did some deferred compensation. In fact, he was still receiving, I think, $500,000 a year through, I think, 2025 from the first deal that he made there. And so they said, how about deferred comp? So they instructed me, go to the accounting department, have them crunch some numbers, and figure out if we defer the money out 10 years and then pay it out over another 25 years, you know, how much we could make on his money. Now, the reason they thought that was because of the relation with Bernie Madoff. Remember Bernie Madoff, the infamous financier who obviously had the Ponzi scheme and is in jail for 170, 180 years or something like that, was a dear friend of the Wilpons. He vacationed with the Wilpons. He was a guy that was around the team a lot. He was at every opening day party. He was at playoff parties. He was at. He went to Japan with us when we opened the series there in 2000. And so I heard his name probably every week for 13 years in the Mets front office, Bernie Madoff, because he was a big part of the investment vehicle. So the idea was find out from accounting that, you know, if the market does this and that, runs some iterations, you know, sort of playing out over a 35-year period, what the market could do, and what level of interest we could pay Bonilla to make him be enticed to take deferred comp, and for us us, meaning the Mets ownership, to make money on his money. And I saw a couple of the sort of, you know, potentials that they thought they could make somewhere between $40 to $65 million on his $5.9 million by deferring it out over 10 years and paying it out, you know, in installments over 25 years. So 35 years worth of investment, they thought they could make millions of dollars on his $5.9 million. Now, you know, economists and accountants will tell you that and financial advisors that, yeah, there's some logic to their plan, but, you know, they didn't obviously anticipate the Madoff thing blowing up completely. And, you know, on top of that, the Mets lost, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in the whole Madoff scandal. So it sort of blew up in their face.
Yeah, I would say so. Like, Bobby Bonilla benefited from Bernie Madoff, basically. Like, the only person on earth that appreciates Bernie Madoff is probably Bobby Bonilla, because he's making money, yeah, and a lot of money, yeah, for a long, long time.
Well, actually, Mo Vaughn, we deferred a little Mo Vaughn money, too. So that we kind of did that, too. So I got those deals everywhere. and here, you know, the amazing part of it, there's only 16 more years of payment. So I think I've only got the next 16 years to have to answer questions every July 1st about it. So not the worst thing in the world.
Steve, does Bobby reach out? Does he send you a card every July 1st to thank you for the generosity?
No, that's the shame of it all. He does not do that. It's horrifying to me that I don't, you know, get some stipend in the mail. I mean, even just, you know, send me a nice gift basket, you know,
no
basket
kidding.
Of fruit or something like that would be nice. But no, I have not gotten anything in return yet.
With Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 MLB analyst. So Aaron Sanchez is slated to be on the mound tomorrow night. And Ken Rosenthal brought this up yesterday. He tweeted out that his next start, Friday night, the last day for the Blue Jays to option Aaron Sanchez to the minors is Sunday, because he will reach 5 years service and gains the right to reject any assignment as of Monday.
Right.
How would you handle Aaron Sanchez if you're the Blue Jays between now and Sunday?
Yeah, good job by Ken Rosenthal, by the way, because I was writing that and had that note, too, because he started the year with 4 years and 69 days. Which means he needed 103 days of service this year to qualify for that fifth year. And that does mean that on Monday, he qualifies for 5 full years of service. And at that point, the player has the right to reject the option. So here's the thing. I personally probably wouldn't option him. What I would do, though, is he would not make another start for me. I would put him in the bullpen, and I would pitch him in the bullpen tomorrow. I'd pitch him again on Sunday, an inning each day. And then I'd bring him back as a reliever afterwards. I would not make him a starter. I think that there's a couple things. One, his approach right now as a starter is not effective. He's very ineffective. He's walking far too many batters. He's got the most walks in Major League Baseball to this point in the season. And I think that the idea of getting him back in the bullpen to start to get a mindset of attacking hitters again is the right thing for him to do as a pitcher. I also think that it may protect the blisters and nail issues that he has, but he may have to do a complete remake. And I kind of close my eyes, and I'm writing about this, and I'll post my story tomorrow, but I'm writing that you can close your eyes a little bit and dream about Aaron Sanchez the same way as you can Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton used to be a sinker-slider guy who was a failed pitcher. I mean, you know, look at his numbers with the Pirates. I think he had one year that he was like 1-13 or something like that. He had an awful season. And yet he ended up sort of going to the Phillies before he ended up tearing his groin, where he couldn't pitch most of the year. But he was in spring training throwing 96 four-seam fastballs and curveballs and no longer being sort of the sinker-slider guy. And so he had the same formula that Sanchez had, and now he's a completely different pitcher. Sanchez has a great arm. It's being wasted right now. And it will be sort of this career where they go, I wonder what could have happened if. And I think they need dramatic changes. So I don't know that I'd send him to the minors, but I would absolutely put him in the bullpen, start to rebuild him. And if that's where he thrives, leave him there. And then only later would I consider ever thinking about doing something different. But I think they have to look at changing his repertoire in addition to his role.
I mean, Steve, I mean, in Toronto, Hayes and I were batting it around. It has this sort of ring of Ricky Romero. Not that it's gotten to the point of Ricky Romero, but when Ricky Romero was, you know, what, 26 years old, he was an all-star, he was at the top of his game, and it was only a couple years later that he essentially could not pitch in the major leagues anymore. Now, Sanchez is 27. but he's heading in that direction. I mean, do you see anything, any sort of parallels there in the way this devolution has occurred?
Yeah, sure. I think you're right. Romero he couldn't get anybody out. His stuff deteriorated, though, and I don't know that this is a stuff issue for Sanchez. One, he has no confidence right now, and he's uncertain about throwing the ball over the plate. He's trying to miss bats a little bit. And so that's what I think going to the bullpen. A lot of times what it does for pitchers is you come out, you air it out for an inning, and it gets you back to thinking aggressively on the attack mode rather than sort of trying to navigate and maneuver and manage your way through anywhere from 6 to 9 innings. But it does have some of that, right? And for Romero, I loved him when he was locked in and an all-star. He looked like he was going to keep figuring it out because a lot of times left-handers figure it out a little bit later. You know, for Sanchez, the arm is still there. There's still really good stuff, but it's not effective. He can't stay healthy, and he can't throw strikes. Other than that, it's been really good. And so I think they need to sort of figure out what to do to get him back on track. I think it has to be dramatic. I don't know about the minor leagues. I personally am not sure that's the answer, although they've done it. Listen, I can understand if they do it because their development staff has done a really nice job. Lourdes Gurriel went down there hit 175, and now nobody can get him out. So they have rebuilt guys before, and we've seen it. You go back to Halliday back in the days. Now, different crew, different staff, and different sort of instructors. So if I could understand if they do it. It's not what I would do, but I'm not going to be shocked if they do send him down.
I mean, in your experience, though, Steve, how much of this, you know, the success of this turnaround project, if that's what this becomes, how much of that will just be Sanchez connecting with one of those pitching coaches somewhere in the system and kind of finding a simpatico in the way they're going to attack this problem?
Yeah, I think that, you know, what sometimes happens, and it drives pitching coaches crazy, is that a different voice saying exactly the same thing, all of a sudden a light bulb goes on for the pitcher, and he goes, oh, man, wow, that makes so much sense to me. And the guy who's been with him every day saying exactly the same thing, what are you talking about? I've been saying that. But it happens sometimes where there's that connection. The thing that is a little concerning is that if they fix him, they may fix him for his next team.
Yes.
Right? Because they've got one more year of control next year, then he goes to free agency. And so, right, you can fix him for next year when the games probably aren't going to mean much for the Jays as they still go through the rebuilding process. And then he's a free agent, and then, you know, the Yankees will sign him, and he'll go on and win 20 games or something, right? So now they have the right thing, the chance to sign him, and maybe there will be a connection there to be able to do that. But you got to start somewhere. And I wrote several weeks ago that they need to do something dramatically different. What they're, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. That's what it feels like. Well, let's give them the ball again 5 days from now and see what happens. No, change it dramatically. So AAA would be dramatic, but I think the role needs to change as much or more than the geography needs to change.
With Steve Phillips, Marcus Stroman will not go tonight, dealing with a shoulder issue. Doesn't sound like it's too serious, but he is slated to represent the team at the All-Star game. How do you see the Jays handling this, and more importantly, do you think Stroman would listen to them if they suggested they didn't want him to pitch at the All-Star game?
Yeah, I think they have some level of control. If he's not capable of pitching in a regular season game, he can still go, but I'd be surprised if he pitches in the All-Star game, and I would be inclined to disallow that and to make sure loud and clear that the league understood that because he's too valuable to the Blue Jays to get hurt in an All-Star game. And if the question is, if this is the way it goes, if he gets hurt in the All-Star game and everybody says, oh, why did you let him pitch anyways? He couldn't pitch in the regular season for you. Why would you let him pitch there? And you don't have an answer, then you shouldn't let him pitch in the All-Star game. So he's too valuable to let get injured. Now, this is a left shoulder issue, mm-hmm. not a right shoulder issue, right? So not a throwing arm. But I he's only going to pitch in a regular season game for me before he pitches an All-Star game, or he doesn't pitch in the All-Star game for me. Now, that would be the way it goes, because his value right now, they've got to turn him and flip him into something. And as soon as he pitches his next regular season game, pitches well, comes out of it healthy, last start he makes for the Blue Jays, I move him from there. I don't take another chance to let him pitch.
Yeah.
I move him on and make the best deal I can.
Absolutely. With Steve Phillips, we were talking about the MVP race now that we're kind of at the midpoint of the season. Regardless of wins and losses, Mike Trout is running away with it in the American League, and he should. The National League, though, man, this is a fascinating race. because you've got Christian Yelich, who is going to put up, or is on pace to put up, even better numbers than he put up a year ago when he won the MVP. Probably going to hit 60 bombs, if not more. Yet it feels like Cody Bellinger is like the guy. Like, that's who you're chasing. It's Bellinger because of the numbers he's putting up and because of the team he's playing on. If you had a vote today, who would you vote, Yelich or Bellinger?
Yeah, I think you could throw Josh Bell as sort of a third-place guy, a little bit behind those two, but certainly in the mix of what he's doing at Pittsburgh. I'd give it to Bellinger. You know, I look at you look at WAR right now, wins above replacement. If they, you know, Bellinger's actually got a pretty significant lead over Yelich in the area. Defense is a big part of it. He is an exceptional outfielder, Bellinger. He can run. He can throw. He's also a very good first baseman when he comes in and plays first base. And I think the clutch nature of his performance so far. Now, we saw Yelich get, you know, pretty clutch, go crazy last year. He's got 30-plus home runs right now. But I just think Bellinger feels like he's put this team on his shoulders, and there's magic every night. What do they have, 5 straight walk-off wins, including 2 home runs by him yesterday and a home run in the 10th inning to walk away with that. So I think Bellinger gets the vote right now, but there's a lot of baseball left to be played to determine that one. And my guess is those two will be 1-2 at the end of the year. It's just a matter of which order.
The Dodgers are 14 games up on Colorado. Like, that division's been tight for years, and now it's, like, not happening, man. the Dodgers are taking off.
Yeah, they are. You know, you think about the Buffalo Bills, right? 3 years in a row, going to the Super Bowl, losing, and you know, never really sort of recovering from it. It feels to me a little bit different for the Dodgers. You know, last 2 World Series, they come up short. But it doesn't in any way seem to have disincentivized them. They are as motivated as they've been. And you know, Dave Roberts makes every right decision. The depth of their team is fantastic. Bellinger has gotten better and better. You know, they're surviving with Seager out being injured. Taylor's now on fire, and they had a run earlier this year, but 3 straight walk-offs by 3 rookies hitting home runs. I mean, these are guys that weren't even part of the equation when the season started. And so that there's such a level of depth of talent there, and they are the best at putting them in a position to succeed. Every night, the guys who play are the right guys who match up against the opposing pitcher. You know, not whether it's a right-hander or a left-hander, but whether he's a high-ball pitcher, a low-ball pitcher, who are the guys who hit sliders, who are the guys who hit change-ups. You know, that's what they go to that depth of matching up. And they've got options late in the game. They do need, I think, to fortify the middle relief a little bit, but I'm nitpicking a little bit there. Those are rich people problems that they have. But they are a fantastic team right now, and I think the class of Major League Baseball.
Great stuff. As always, Steve, we'll do it again soon. Thank you, buddy.
You bet, guys.
There's Steve Phillips, our MLB analyst. Yeah, the Dodgers are putting in work, man. They plus 130 run differential. Plus 130. The Yankees are plus 107.
Crazy.
Like, the Dodgers are lapping everyone, where, you know, Colorado and Arizona have been in the race, you know, in the past couple of years. And the Giants, you talk about a team that dominated. Like, they weren't quite a dynasty, but they won 3 World Series
in
6 years or 7
Incredible.
Years. Just a disaster.
They're falling off the map.
They're a mess.
Totally
mess. And they're unloading pieces. Like, everyone knows by the end of the month, guys are going. Guys are getting dealt. Like, long-standing guys that have been a part of that organization.
Hey, man. For the Giants got the most beautiful ballpark in Major League Baseball, by my estimation. But guess what? Guess who's opening up shop down the street? The Warriors.
Warriors are in San Fran,
right down the street.
Right.
From where the
Is it downtown? Like, yeah. Are they going to be downtown? I thought they were, because like the Niners park, like Levi Stadium's like outside of San Francisco.
That's in Santa Clara. It's almost in San Jose.
Yeah, it's like 40 minutes outside.
That's not anywhere connected to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Even though they're still called the San Francisco 49ers. No, but I toured it when we were down there for the finals. It's a beautiful facility. It's right on the bay there.
Oh, nice.
And just so it's on the same McCovey Cove. If you look down the bay from McCovey Cove, that's where the new Warriors Arena is. It's walking distance.
Perfect.
It's a stone's throw.
Well, that's what we did. Like, we were in San Francisco about 4 years ago. We stayed somewhere downtown. We walked to the park.
Yeah.
I think it took us half an hour, but you're walking downtown. You're in San Francisco.
It's a gorgeous park.
Yeah. Oh, it is the nicest park in baseball.
It might be the most. I've been lucky to go to a lot of great sports facilities. Like, forget ballparks. In terms of just a place to go to watch sports.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything that is its equal.
I could not suggest it more. Like, I love Wrigley. I love Fenway.
Wrigley's a dump. I mean,
yeah, but it's not my dump.
No.
So, like, I'm not over it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
and I love dumps, and I'm a guy that loves a dump.
Yes.
I do. I love a cruddy old ballpark that smells like urine and all that.
All that, man. The ivy, the bleachers, and Wrigleyville. Like, it's got history, man, and you feel it. Like, the second you're there, you know this is baseball. This is where Harry Carey was calling games.
Yeah. No, there's something special about those places, and there's so few of them now.
Right.
They're even more special.
But, AT&T is the Mona Lisa. Like, there's something special about it that it just, it's spectacular.
It really is
a spectacular park. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. The Jays again back in action tonight with the Red Sox down at the Dome. We'll tee that up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on the over in the Blue Jay game tonight. I'm on the Angels tonight in Texas. And I got to be on the Dodgers at home against the Padres. How do you bet against the Dodgers right now? You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. So, Feschuk, nothing on Kawhi Leonard. I guess we're not expecting anything tonight. It's not going to be a leak. I mean, no one's going to leak anything at this point.
I think we were sort of going over the scenarios off the air. The only leak possibility is the moment he tells the teams that he's not coming to those teams. And that's when the leaks would spring.
And you got to think they're simultaneous.
You'd have to think that.
You don't think he's going to call one and be like, you guys are out, I'm down to two. Like, I find that hard to believe. Because he doesn't owe them anything. He doesn't have, like.
But, there would be a certain kind of business person who would want to make that call personally to a Jerry West out of respect.
Right.
Or to a Jeannie Buss out of respect as the scion of one of the great franchises of the league.
Yes, and I think Kawhi will show that respect. Could be the Raptors he's calling up and saying.
Could be the Raptors, although
I think you do that.
I'm not expecting it. I don't have a dog in the fight. Obviously, it'd be better for everybody in the Toronto media if he came back to Toronto.
Yeah. I got a dog in the fight. I want him here in Toronto. I'm not going to lie about that. I mean, it makes it so much more interesting. And we're in the content game.
We are.
Covering Kawhi Leonard and a chance to double back on a championship. Let's all be honest. We want to see that happen.
I'd be happy about that for my own professional selfishness, for sure. And I understand why fans are desperate to have him back. But I think it's lining up that Toronto's getting him. I keep running the L.A. scenarios through my mind, and I understand we both love L.A., you and I.
Mm-hmm.
We've been there a couple times. I've been there many times. It's a joy to be there.
Love L.A.
It's hard to imagine you wouldn't want to live there. But if you're the ultimate competitor and you care about the game above all, Toronto's the place.
And you're about trust and comfort.
Yeah.
He knows that it works in Toronto, and he knows what they will bring in Toronto. So the familiarity. I mean, I'm honestly still astonished. Like, not necessarily that there haven't been any leaks, but if he's still in Toronto, like, I haven't seen anyone post a tweet or an Instagram post saying, I just saw him walk down Yonge. Or I saw him get into a car and he's on his way to Drake's house. Like, no one's even seen the guy in Toronto.
Tinted, parking garage to parking garage, SUV with
he
tinted
perfected
windows,
it this year.
Ballpark, sunglasses, ball cap, sunglasses.
He's 6'7" and everyone knows who he is.
There is that.
Anyway. All right, Dave. Good seeing you, man. Thanks
good
for this
you.
As always, buddy. There's Dave Feschuk from the Toronto Star. I think Dave Poulin's in here tomorrow. Don't forget Ryan O'Reilly on the morning show. First up at 9:15 tomorrow morning. We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.